Moncrief on News Talk.
As you may know, last week famine was officially declared for parts of the Gaza Strip, something aid agencies had been warning of for quite some time. So will that make any difference to the Israeli resistance to letting in food aid? Niall O'Keefe from the Irish Red Cross is just back from the West Bank, which is also facing some harrowing problems. Niall, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
Actually, could we start talking about the West Bank, in that obviously the situation isn't as critical as Gaza, but there is displacement going on. There are people, communities being moved all over the place.
Yeah, there is displacement in the West Bank. There's about 70 or 80,000 people who have been displaced in the West Bank, largely due to security reasons. They've been moved around, and security or conflict happening in some small areas. And the consequences for those people then are that they have nowhere to live. They are living with friends or extended family members. There is very little accommodation available for them elsewhere in the West Bank. And there are also lots of restrictions in the West Bank around movement. And so for people then who are, for example, wanting to get access to essential services like health services, they can't get to those so quickly, so easily. Working with the Irish Red Cross, we partner with our sister organisation, the Palestinian Red Crescent, who's made up of mostly of volunteers. And we met one group of volunteers, and it was funny, one guy who was a taxi driver, and he had seen the difficulties of people that they were experiencing getting access to different services, and the problems of ambulances getting into villages where they could no longer get in there. So this taxi driver volunteered with the Palestinian Red Crescent. He trained as a first responder with us, and now he was somebody who was able to respond where there was a medical need inside in the village, and give them some support initially, and where necessary be able to transport them out to where they could get an ambulance or something. So the West Bank, sure, if there was, everything else was normal, people would be profiling the West Bank situation that is there. But it's difficult. And I suppose from everybody that is there with the Palestinian Red Crescent, and I know everybody else that we've met, they're talking about their brothers and sisters really that are in Gaza and mindful of all of those. But they themselves are experiencing their own difficult situations.
And those restrictions on movement, and, I suppose the IDF is saying, it's for security reasons. But is part of that security reason because they have to provide security for ever more Israeli settlements?
I don't know what the reason is for the motivation for the security and for the restrictions. I know we were in Ramallah for a couple of days in the West Bank, and one of the days we were traveling down to the south, down to a village outside of Hebron. When you look it up on Google Maps, it says it's 77 kilometres. It took us over 3 hours to get down there because we were trying to now find the right road and all of these things. So, the challenges for people just moving around, and that was just us kind of travelling up and down what should have been the main road. It happens quite a bit inside in towns and villages, people not able to get access to the hospital, which should be maybe 20 minutes drive over the road, but there are restrictions on the way, and for them, getting access to that, it might otherwise mean just 2 or 3 hours to go about some roundabout road to get into the location. So it's a challenge where, that people are experiencing. There's a little bit they are used to it, but for them, I think they are talking about it, that it has, over the last 18 months, 2 years, since there's a lot more increased tension in the area. Maybe the security restrictions have increased to some extent since then in the West Bank as well.
Has it become more difficult to operate for aid agencies to operate in the West Bank?
The access is probably the main thing in terms of going in and out of different roads and the logistics. There are also challenges in terms of getting your supplies into the country, into the Palestinian territory. The external borders continue to be, I suppose, controlled by the Israeli authorities. And also then there has been a new process in the recent months of terms of registration. So for international organizations who are working in the West Bank or in Gaza, they have to be registered with the Israeli authorities, and there are some restrictions around that. So from our perspective in the Irish Red Cross, we work with the Palestinian Red Crescent. So they are a, if you like, a local organisation. And they, you know, maybe they are from the community and of the community, and they can move around a little bit more easily. And but yeah, they're still facing quite a few challenges in terms of their work on a day to day basis. Like, yeah.
And is the Red Crescent operating within Gaza? Or Canada?
Yes, yeah. So most of their work would really be in Gaza. So the Red Crescent, like a little bit like the Irish Red Cross in some ways, where we have volunteers who come out on an emergency. Mm. Like really, the Palestinian Red Crescent have over 10,000 volunteers who've been coming out 24/7 for the last 2 years, and over half of those are in Gaza. So we were in the West Bank meeting with people who were providing them, if you like, back office support and kind of logistical support from the West Bank. But the biggest part of their programs are in Gaza, responding to the humanitarian crisis that is there now, and obviously has deteriorated pretty sharply in the last while. But they've been working with them, like, you know, they've been there for decades, really responding to the situation. And a bit like the West Bank, you know, 10,000 volunteers, 5,000 more in Gaza. They're from the community. They're of the community. They experience the same humanitarian crisis. They experience the same displacement, the lack of water, the lack of food that everybody else is experiencing. So it's not just that they're physically present, but they are experiencing the same sort of hardships as everybody else.
Yeah, because I've wondered about that. People who are on the ground in Gaza, if you're volunteering for the Red Crescent, for instance, you're probably hungry yourself. Your children are hungry. How can you help other people in those circumstances?
Well, this is it, yeah. And they have, like, and it's amazing just talking to the staff and the volunteers of the Palestinian Red Crescent, who we met, and they were talking about the supports that they're providing to their colleagues in Gaza. And the kind of support, you know, in terms of motivation. Obviously, they're trying to provide as much logistical support, coordination around it and stuff. But they're extremely aware of the challenges that their colleagues are experiencing in terms of displacement themselves and what they expected somebody, you know, they might have a project plan to do something for this week. Like, that group of volunteers may have been displaced. Mm. And so, you know, apart from, sure, the food shortages, but they might no longer be here to be able to implement the activity that you were planning to do this week. And for them as well, like, the volunteers that we met, like, they're working 24/7. I suppose there's a sense from them that they need to be doing more, and they'll be, you know, encouraging me and many others that visit them to and spend time to push for that and vocalise the challenges that they have. But there's also a sense that they, you know, themselves, despite them being exhausted, there's a sense that they, you know, that they have a sense of guilt that they can't do enough. Like, yeah.
Yeah, you can see why. In terms of medical supplies, is anything getting into Gaza?
So for the Palestinian Red Crescent, and we've been supporting them for quite a while, but since March, they had not been able to get any medical supplies into Gaza. Just in the last week, they managed to get... Yes, in the last week, the weekend before last, they managed to get 9 pallets of medical supplies in, which was really, really valuable for them. The stocks that had been really run down over the last number of months. So that's something very positive for them inside. Otherwise, like the Palestinian Red Crescent, they have, you know, they're working on a shoestring in many ways in terms of supplies and in terms of materials that they need to implement the activities that they have. They have focused, I suppose, you know, they have been doing food and they have been doing water and medical areas. Because of the difficulty in getting in supplies in there, they've now tried to prioritize the medical area, because that's something that they have a bigger infrastructure. And yes, the Palestinian Red Crescent, I suppose, is probably the biggest organization that is able to provide that medical type support. But even then, they have, like, they're running 4 hospitals. It was never in their plan to be running 4 hospitals. So they're doing that. They have 26 medical points, which is kind of, you know, the real basic kind of 1 or 2 people in an area. But at any one time, they're only able to, there's only 12 of them that are running, or 12 or 13, because, you know, the other half have either been displaced, or they have a shortage of something, or so they're doing what they can to, you know, they plan for maybe 26, but they can manage to get 12 or 13 of them operating at any one go. So they are getting some supplies in, and the support that we give them, like, we made a further contribution to them the last couple of weeks and to our wider Red Cross. People in Ireland have been great in terms of donating to the Irish Red Cross, which is fantastic. But yeah, it's really down to the challenges on the ground of people just getting the supplies into the Gaza Strip and then being able to to kind of get it out there to people that are in need of it. Like,
And the IDF cooperates with it, or in as far as they cooperate with anyone, with, because you know the way they won't have anything to do with UNRWA now, but they will talk to the Red Crescent, will they?
Yeah, there's a fairly sophisticated, what they call a coordination mechanism that takes place. So if you want to go with your ambulance from one area to the next area, you need to share your information. And there's a, you know, the Red Cross movement has a coordination control group or office for this. And they share the information saying, listen, at 9 o'clock today, we are going from A to B and this is the route and so on. And then the ambulance will go, but also a car will go with them. And the car will be responsible for coordinating the movement. Mm-hmm. The ambulance, obviously, is responsible for the medical support. And if any stage during the day they get, that information is shared with the authorities. And if any point during the day something goes wrong, that could be called off or moved back. Unfortunately, like, it works for quite a bit, and it's great, like, yeah, that it does work. In a conflict zone, you need to have it, and there is a coordination. It doesn't work all the time, and unfortunately, like, over 40 Palestinian Red Crescent staff and volunteers have been killed just going out in ambulances and going out and doing what they can, like, and some of them at home and stuff. So it's not risk-free. Like, there are risks. But this is what they do to respond.
Massive risks. Those four hospitals you spoke of, what kind of condition are those places in?
Very basic as well. Like, and two of them are field hospitals, so they've been just made up from mobile materials like tents and beds that have been brought in. The other two then are ones that have been damaged. But we had heard from them from the Palestinian Red Crescent 2 weeks ago when we were there about how they managed to reconstruct a little bit an ICU unit that was able to deal with six patients, but it was they were using all of the rubble and the remains from other hospitals and other units that had been hit and damaged and various things. So they're able to kind of cobble together bits, total improvisation. It's not great, so really, really difficult. And then for the staff themselves and the people who are working there, you have medical staff, you have needing to provide the water that's around it and provide the sanitation that's around it and all of those things. So there's a lot that's required to make it work. And then there's always a risk that it might be hit or damaged in some way again tomorrow, So it's very difficult for them.
Yeah, because I imagine part of this difficulty is that now the idea for saying everybody get out of Gaza City, which it seems like a lot of people aren't going to do, ordinary people, because maybe they've nowhere to go or they're just exhausted. But does that mean that from the point of view of particularly a medical aid agency, if they might have had some sort of medical operation there, they now have to move it out of Gaza City, even though there's still a large population there?
Yes. And this is where back to the 26 medical points we were talking about, that there, even though the kind of primary kind of level of healthcare, like however basic it is, like they're kind of almost moving around, continuously, because there is so much, like 8 or 9 out of every 10 persons in Gaza have been displaced many, multiple times. There's the evacuation orders that are taking place. And like you say, I suppose some people just won't move because this is where they've decided they're going to stay. Very, very difficult for people themselves. And there isn't that much space to be moving towards. And I suppose there's a sense for many of the humanitarian actors there that we might move to the next location, but are we really safe in the next location as well? But logistically, in terms of the moving around and providing services, they need to be able to move them. They need to be able to provide the small clinics. That was one of the reasons why they set up that kind of basic thing, just to have it in the community and so that they can provide a basic level of support in the community. And if we have to move it in 5 minutes, we can move it pretty quickly, So that was kind of a little bit that approach, and making sure we have something that's flexible and can respond. But it continues to be, really difficult for them, and they have to move.
Meanwhile, food and supplies are piling up outside.
Yeah, and that is the issue. And I suppose in some ways the declaration of famine last week, I suppose hoping that that's now a catalyst of some form to kind of say, listen, the world needs to do more because like it's not a, you know, there's no justification whatsoever for the restrictions that exist. And so, you know, aid needs to get into Gaza. Simple as, like, yeah, it needs to be the medical aid, the food, water, sanitation, and all of those things need to get into Gaza. And they need, you know, every week we hear of news, one form or another, but it's never good news, really. No. It always seems to be deteriorating. And whenever you think it's not, it can't get worse, suddenly it does get worse. Like, yeah. The only positive things from our side of it is that there are lots of people that are on the ground. They're doing what they can, and they are providing support to communities with whatever basic level of capacity that they have to provide support. But yeah, very difficult for them to be able to know that outside that there is aid and that the world is watching, and for them inside that they are experiencing this. They're experiencing famine, as it was declared last year.
Like, you've been working in aid for some decades now. As I understand, you first started working in Rwanda just after that genocide. Is there, in your experience, is there anything comparable to what's happening in Gaza now?
Like, it's the humanitarian crisis. Like, when I was working in the Rwandan refugee camps, like, after the genocide, it was literally the food shortages that people were experiencing, the water and like people not having anything. And, you know, that was desperate situation for people. Like, yeah. And here, you know, with famine being declared here as well, it's, you know, inside in Gaza, there must be, you know, the experiences of people and what they are enduring at the moment. I suppose one of the things that I remember from, and you know, I see images of it now is people who have lost their home and who are displaced, and they're moving to, they're told they can go to a camp, and in that camp they get a plastic sheeting, and you live under a plastic sheeting, like, and that's it, and your whole family. And so, you know, 2 weeks ago you might have had a house, or that might have, you know, something might have happened to that. Now you might be living in somebody else's house or somebody else's room or front room or whatever, and now you're living under a plastic sheeting. And I suppose, you know, and that was, you know, that reminds me of refugee camps, you know, for 30 years ago, of people living in that sort of condition. You know, apart from the physical side of it, of living under that and being exposed to the elements. When we were there last 2 weeks ago, it was over 40 degrees during the day. Like, yeah, so it's quite difficult. And then, you know, you've no longer any privacy. You know, the toilets and sanitation facilities are way down at the end of the line of tents. And so, you know, your dignity is, you left behind a long time ago, like, you know, and those are the conditions that people who are in refugee camps are living in, like, you know, living under that plastic sheeting type of stuff. You know, that's just atrocious in the year 2025, like, that people are still living or having to live in those sort of conditions. So,
yeah.
So, yeah.
Somebody's texting in to say they want to donate. Also wondering if it makes any difference if the aid isn't allowed into Gaza.
We're hoping, well, you know, in the last while we have contributed funds just to the running of the hospital inside in Gaza, because people are running the hospitals inside in Gaza, and it's making a contribution. It's mostly done by volunteers, but it's making a contribution to them so that they can, you know, they have some sort of support. And inside in Gaza, actually, one of the things that has happened, we were hearing from people, is that, sure, there's some cash, but they started battering, and they have, not Revolut, but something like this kind of thing, where they are now able to share money, electronic money, digital money. And so they are able to buy some small supplies between each other, and that's helpful inside in Gaza. So there are some things. But I suppose the other thing is that, it's like someday, hopefully soon, the border will open up and supplies will get in. And no society, no community recovers from a famine, you know, within days. Like, it takes weeks, months, years. Like, So for people who are able to contribute, fantastic. And thanks to everybody who has, we've been, you know, there's a huge amount of generosity in Ireland in that regard, which is fantastic. But yeah, like, we know that the situation in Gaza and in the West Bank too, unfortunately, will continue as it is. Even if it was, you know, there was a complete change today and ever the borders opened, it will continue to be a very difficult situation for a long time to come, unfortunately. So yeah, a lot of us are kind of, and a lot in the humanitarian community are working and trying to do whatever preparation we can for the moments. A bit like last week there and the week before, where we did manage to get nine pallets of medical aid into Gaza. So, that, you know, small drops like that kind of help.
Yeah. Let's hope that turns into something more substantial. Niall O'Keefe is Head of International and Migration at the Irish Red Cross. Niall, thanks a million for coming into us.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.